Good morning. This is February 10th, Sunday, 2013. And we are continuing our series of uncomfortable talks. Uncomfortable to the human being, that is. Because the human being must die. Yesterday we discussed the first chapter of Genesis and the beautiful experience that comes to us when we are able to stand still and behold that creation flowing out from the invisible pool of silence and forming itself, appearing as forms. We say we live in our consciousness, and we do. No illusion is ever externalized, so we either live in a human state of consciousness, which is divided in good and evil, and the belief in both of those, or we stand and behold as the Christ, that expression of Christ consciousness, God consciousness flowing. And I just happened to notice in this Thunder of Silence by Joel Goldsmith, he says, every time that the thought comes to us, I need this, I need that, I would like this, I would like that, I should have this, I should have that, our answer must be, man shall not live by bread alone, by effect, by creation, that false creation, but by my spirit, the real creator. That must be a continuous realization, not continuous thought. He didn't say that, did he? A continuous realization or a continuous awareness. I live by this inner spirit, which is why we suggested that we take 1 or 2 minutes out of every hour to remember. That must be a continuous realization, he says, until we have overcome our desire for anybody or anything in the external realm. We have to lose all desire for the visible in the realization that we live not by that which is visible, but by that which is invisible. You see, we are surrendering humanhood. We do not live by any one or anything. We live by that invisible consciousness flowing. And then we shall find, he says, that the infinite invisible will produce in our experience the persons, things, circumstances, and conditions necessary to our daily life. In the same way, every time we are tempted to think of some power, some negative, evil, erroneous power that apparently is dominating our life, rendering it futile and fruitless, and which we want destroyed, let us smile at it, as we realize, again, as we come into the conscious awareness, no, I have no need of any power with which to overcome this discord. There is a God, even though I do not know what God is. And I cannot know what God is because it is beyond the uttermost comprehension of the human mind. But elsewhere he says, you can know God as an experience, not as a comprehension of the human mind. And so you see, he suggests in this chapter called Beyond Power that we stop that archaic, age-old, centuries-old belief that we need a power to overcome our problems. Surely in yesterday's talk you saw that, or you felt that, there is no power that we need to throw at a problem. We need to realize that the problem is world mind presenting a mental image. Now, the term is not important. Again, terms are not important. What is important is that you see that there's a fabric, and that all appearances of good or evil are made from this fabric, and that the fabric is world thought, or mental images. Now you can use the term mental images, world thought, mortal mind, hypnotism, mesmerism, illusion, this world, Maya. It does not matter what term you use. Use the term you're comfortable with, because you're only using that term long enough to drop it. You see, understanding has no meaning. It's not a matter of understanding truth. It's not a matter of understanding the world's illusion or the illusion of a world. It's not a matter of understanding that. It's a matter of seeing through that. And this you don't do with the mind. The mind, the human mind, is a tool of that very hypnotism, mental images, world mind. It's a tool of that. Just as your sense of hearing is a tool of this physical body, so is the human mind a tool of world mind, world thought, universal belief, whatever term you like. And so it's not necessary to understand it at depth. It doesn't take a great deal of understanding. Understanding is also a part of that world mind. You see, we have to tread in a place where the mind has no existence. Which is why Joel stresses again and again, or the Spirit stresses, the Christ within you stresses, that this pool of silence where the mind does not function, this is where you must rest. Beside this pool, beside this deep well, so, we who are rising in consciousness must see that there is no need for power to overcome anything at any time, ever. In this realm of no power, in your ability to relax to such an extent that you, well, it's like looking at a lake, the surface of a lake, and the water, and there's no breeze, it's very still, and the surface is like glass. And nothing is disturbing it. It's just still, just silent. No effort. It's effortless being, resting, ising. In that state of using no power, in that state where no power fills your being, in that realm of no power, God is living, being, ising. And so he tells us what we learned yesterday is that in the second chapter of Genesis, where we use power to overcome evil and replace it with good, That's that state of humanhood that we must rise above, rise out of. We must drop. I'm not saying that you need to rise out of that today and never go back, because it's not possible. You've been in there too many centuries. I'm saying and suggesting you drop it in these moments, these few moments of every hour, and rest back in that pool of nothing, that pool of nothing the mind can get a hold of, that pool of silence and no power and nothingness. Out of that infinite nothingness, the divine first chapter of Genesis, the perfect creation, flows. And it's nothing the mind can understand, so stop trying. Your understanding is not necessary now. Understanding was something that the mind, the world mind, thought it needed. But you are in a place where you are rising above that mind, into a realm of no power, into a realm of peace without end, into a realm of silence. In Joel's book, Beyond Words and Thoughts, which is specifically how to rise into that pool of silence, he explains something in the chapter Truth Unveiled. It's a very beautiful chapter. It's one of my favorite chapters of all time. It's right next to the spiritual sense of the universe, or the true sense of the universe, which we read a little from yesterday, and the New Horizon. I believe these three chapters have the entire message of moving from mind to spirit. So let's see if something in here presents itself. First of all, yesterday we spoke of moving out of humanhood and into Christ consciousness. And we said that Joel had made it, because he said, "I finally made it. I no longer see humans anywhere, but I behold Christ everywhere." He says, "I myself have beheld the incorporeal form of man dozens and dozens of times." Now, so in moving from humanhood to godhood or Christhood, or being a beholder of Christ consciousness forming that new creation, there's an exact time, we said, when the transformation takes place. Now, before we read this, I wanted to read this from the Kai Lua study series on the chapter called No Power, which is where the editor pulled a lot from to write that chapter in the Thunder of Silence. But I wanted to read this to you. It says, "Whenever truth is offered to the human mind," and we know what the human mind is, "the human mind wants to crucify that truth because the truth demands that the human mind die." Now, what does that do to you when you hear that? Your human mind must die. Doesn't it make you pause and wonder, now how do I function without a human mind? Why, I've had one my entire life, and maybe many centuries. Most definitely many centuries. How do I function? How can I function? How do I go to work? How do I do the housework without a human mind? And I'm here to tell you that the struggle that the human mind has holding everything together in this balancing act and trying to balance plates on sticks by turning evil into good, and a whole lifetime of this, that human mind really has no idea how to live without itself, does it? It can't conceive of such a thing. So it hears this truth and it says, oh, poppycock, how ridiculous. You're just hiding your head in the sand. What kind of philosophy is this? But I can tell you, and many of you know, maybe all of you know, when you step out of that mind, even if only for brief moments, and you find yourself in that place where God is happening, you find yourself being carried along by the rhythm of God. And you find yourself in the right place at the right time, saying the right things, doing the right things. And all works perfectly. And you find, wow, I really can live without that mind running things. Now, I'm not saying you'll sit in the corner and stare at a wall. On the contrary, Joel says, and I found myself, the more you live outside of that mind and live as a beholder of Christ's consciousness moving things around, the busier you are. So, again, let's read it. Whenever truth is offered to the human mind wants to crucify that truth because the truth demands that the human mind die. Truth demands that we die daily to our humanhood and that we be reborn of the Spirit. And now you saw yesterday, you see, reborn of the Spirit really means a whole new creation, doesn't it? Taking place now in your consciousness. In that quiet temple, that's being reborn of the Spirit. Being a beholder as Spirit forms itself. So he says here, truth doesn't promise anybody that you can go on being a good, comfortable human being. Truth doesn't promise anybody that you can have a lot of money and a lot of fame and a lot of health and a lot of self-indulgence. Truth doesn't promise anybody a life of ease and matter. Truth promises a terrific struggle, a struggle between the spirit and the flesh until the crucifixion. That is the final tearing down of humanhood, the final destruction of man whose breath is in his nostrils, after which comes a very barren period, a wilderness period in the tomb. A period of desolation. That's why it is called the tomb. But after that 3 days, there comes the resurrection. And even in the resurrection, you carry around a torn body, and maybe a torn reputation, too. But 40 days of that, and there comes the ascension above every claim of the human mind. You see, right at that point, you rise out of the human mind and permanently dwell in your Christhood. And it says, he says, then comes the pure spiritual life in which the promises are fulfilled. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will lead you beside the still waters and green pastures. My presence will go before you to make the crooked places straight. I have never seen the righteous begging bread. You see, he says, it is in that demonstration of our Christhood that there are no problems, none whatsoever. All right, so he defines for us there that there's going to be a terrific struggle culminating in a crucifixion and a place of barrenness, desolation, and 40 days in the wilderness, and then finally, an ascension. Now that sounds like one heck of a battle. That sounds like the story of Armageddon in the Revelation, doesn't it? Which is exactly how Herb interpreted it, if you remember from the Revelation series. That's an inner struggle. All right, so, but yesterday we said that there are those who have made it. Yes. The path is narrow, and few there be that enter. But I truly feel all of us hearing this talk can complete this transition. Now, in this chapter, Truth Unveiled, and Beyond Words and Thoughts, Joel talks about his completing the transition just a little. He says, Always since my first spiritual experience, living in two worlds has been difficult for me. Living in that higher consciousness and then coming down to earth, going back into that consciousness and coming back down to earth. But never was it as difficult as in 1963. I remember in 1964 he passed on. So, what he's saying here is what we talked about yesterday. There are two creations, two states of consciousness. One is humanhood and one is Christhood. And what he's saying here is he found that it was really difficult to go into that higher consciousness, to stand still in that inner temple and behold the incorporeal creation, which then appeared as forms in his experience as well as to those that reached out to his consciousness. Standing there in that, and then perhaps the next morning or that afternoon, coming down into humanhood again, going back and forth between the two was very difficult, but never as difficult as it was in 1963. He says, that year marked another period of initiation for me. But even though in 1962 I knew it was to be, I had no knowledge of its intensity, its length, or the nature of the message that would be revealed. So he's telling you that this is an initiation. And so all of us in this class, in this group, are being initiated. We are passing through an initiation, moving out of mind and into spirit, moving out of humanhood and into Christhood. The terms don't matter. It's the awareness, the inner awareness. And why you've been chosen, I do not know. I do not know why I've been chosen. I only know there's an inner burning, an inner longing, and I can't stop. I can't stop. So, Joel says, it is not unnatural, therefore, that that year should have revealed the higher unfoldment, the higher consciousness. This you will understand as you study the work that came through during this period. That is, in 1963. With each successive unfoldment, something was breaking through, leading to the teaching of going beyond words, beyond thoughts, going beyond the mind. Here we go with that human mind has to die. This idea you will find in all the 1963 work, revealing the nature of life as it is lived when you go beyond the mind, beyond thoughts, beyond taking thought, beyond reasoning, beyond power. This is the revelation of the nature of Sabbath and of grace. Now, I want to skip a little bit here over to the next page where he talks about what needs to happen. On the spiritual path, we begin our journey by studying the truth, learning and practicing the truth. We never attain the goal, that is Christhood, of realization, however, until we reach beyond the mind and its knowing of the truth to our becoming truth. That which I am seeking, I am. You cannot know truth or God with the mind. Give up. You're reaching the place in your journey, in your initiation, my dear friends, where the mind cannot come. And Christ says, Christ Jesus says, where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but later. that was spoken to you centuries ago. And now this is later. And now you may follow. But you cannot bring the mind. On the mount, in a high state of consciousness, Moses realized I am, and thereby became I am. Yet there remains still a sense of Moses, as is evidenced by the fact that he spoke of himself as being slow of speech. This is Joel pointing out that Moses has this higher state of consciousness. The first chapter of Genesis, Christ awareness, and yet he drops down into a human sense of Moses and says that he is slow of speech. So there are both going on, just as there are in us. We are in an initiation, as was Moses. The realization of I am in Moses prevailed, however, and with that great illumination came such a height of consciousness that he was able to lead the Hebrews out of slavery to the Promised Land. Had Moses been able to crucify completely the mortal sense of self, which still remained, he would have been able to enter the Promised Land or heaven, or Christhood, but he was bound for a while by a finite sense of himself, which later he overcame. Later he did crucify. Later it was crucified, because in the Mount of Transfiguration, there he and Elijah met with Jesus in the invisible, and all three had overcome that. Now, says Joel in this chapter, truth unveiled. Jesus, however, not only knew the truth, but realized and became the truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nevertheless, a sense of Jesus the man remained, because he said, I can of mine own self do nothing. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. This personal sense of self had to be crucified, as eventually it must be in all of us, or we will not ascend to the Promised Land, or the realization of our spiritual identity, of our Christhood. Jesus' realization of the need to crucify or rise above the seeming mortal sense of self enabled him to make the ascension. Now listen to this line. It's very important. The ascension is always the same. A rising above mind, above knowing the truth, to truth itself. This is why I say in every meditation, for it to be successful, you must step out of the human mind. Bring no thoughts with you. Bring only awareness. Rest back in it. Relax. Rest. Be at peace. No power. Silence. Nothingness. Emptiness. Then into that vessel the Spirit moves over the face of the deep. You don't move it. You don't move. You are very still, like that lake, that crystal clear lake. No movement. And the wind of Spirit moves over the water, and there's a ripple. That ripple is the birth of the new creation, the new consciousness. And I am come, that you might have life, and life more abundantly. And I, the eternal, everlasting life, am come. So says Joel, in many classes, and even in some of the writings, I have said that I did not understand the reason for the crucifixion, why it took place, or why it had to take place, if it had to. It puzzled me, and it was not until 1963, when I myself went through the experience of crucifixion, that the reason and need for the crucifixion of Christ Jesus was revealed to me. But somehow, because he didn't bring a mind with him, somehow after that experience the memory of it passed, and I could not bring it to conscious recollection. But later, the entire scene was revealed to me again, when I went through the experience of ascension, rising above the mind into truth, or God itself. Now there it is in plain English, my friends. Joel made it. He rose above the mind. Remember, the ascension is always the same, rising above mind into truth, or God, or Christ consciousness, or Genesis. And I went through the experience of ascension, he says, rising above mine into truth. And this is what I saw, says Joel. In Jesus' statement, "He that seeth me seeth him that sent me," he revealed he had attained the goal of I am. I am the way. I am the consciousness. I am God. I and God are one. And there is an experience in which he proved this. He took three disciples to what is called the Mount of Transfiguration, which again is this high consciousness above mind, and he revealed to them the Hebrew prophets who were supposed to be dead. But to his enlightened sense, or in that higher consciousness, they were not dead. And he proved to his disciples that they were alive, and they were with them there, in form. And whether he translated them into visible form, or whether he translated himself and the disciples into invisible form, makes no difference, because it is the same experience he translated. He demonstrated to his disciples the truth he later proved. I laid down my life that I might take it again. I can walk into this invisible realm, and I can walk out again. I am spirit. I am the way. And because of Jesus' experience on the Mount of Transfiguration, I understand now that crucifixion was not necessary. Enoch was translated without knowing death. Elijah was translated without knowing death. And Isaiah also may have been translated. Therefore, it was shown to me. Through Jesus' experience on the Mount of Transfiguration, he could have been translated without knowing death. But he chose to accept corporeal death in order to reveal to the disciples that even death is not an experience, but again is an illusory sense or a mental image which must be understood and seen through. And finally, he says at the bottom of this page, "This revelation is proof of the message that there must come a rest to my people. There must come a rest from the activity of mind, taking thought, fearing for our life, constantly knowing truth in order to avoid some experience." See, that's not the way. You know truth over and over in your mind. No. There must come a Sabbath, and in this Sabbath, now we live by grace. See, not by thought-taking, not by thinking of truth, but by that grace which flows as that spirit, that wind across the still lake. We live by grace, and then we do not know the truth. Now truth reveals itself in us, and we become the truth. It's not an activity of the mind. It is soul revealing itself. You see? Everything, all these years, has been pointing to the ascension, to rising out of humanhood and into Christhood. Everything has been telling us, Joel has been saying all this many years, that we must come out of the mind permanently and live in Christ consciousness. And he says, this is the final tearing down of humanhood, the final destruction of man whose breath is in his nostrils. And then comes a resurrection of this spiritual creation, the Son of God, the manifestation of God, Christ. And then the promises are fulfilled. I will never leave you nor forsake you. It is in this demonstration of our Christhood that there are no more problems, none whatsoever. Let us be still for a moment. Let us rest back in that invisible pool, deep, deep pool of spirit. Here, at this point in your initiation, you must leave the mind. Just drop it. It cannot help you anymore. You no longer need an understanding of truth, an understanding of God, an understanding of illusion. No understanding of principles is spirit. The realm of the mind has been good to you, perhaps. It brought you so far. But you cannot go farther with it. And so now drop the mind. Take no thought. In this temple, not made with hands, not made with mind, in this temple is your perfect self. Spirit is its substance, consciousness is its home. Stand still. Very still. And I and the Father are one and the same. Behold, I make all things new. Behold, I come quickly. Behold, spiritual creation. Mind, you had tribulation. In the spirit, you find the Sabbath, this moment of rest. I have been with you from the beginning, from before Abraham was, I am. If you will stand still, if you will cease from thought. I will reveal truth here, now, flowing. And this is life eternal, that you might know me, your true self. On this path, in this part of your initiation, you will learn to rise above the human mind, which is the tool for world mind. You will learn to function by being a beholder of grace forming itself. And you will know, truly, Christ liveth my life. And to every image of the mortal mind, you will know, be not afraid. It is I. It is I. And you will not fight. You will not use power. You will not overcome. You will see through. You will see through by standing still in no power, in silence. You will see through as my creation unfolds before you. And you will live in, through, and by Christ consciousness. And your willingness to die, to step out of the mind, is the invitation to me, Christ, and I will take over. My friends, this is something you cannot explain to humans, even if you would like to. They have no capacity to receive it. You who have labored long and hard, well, let us return to this chapter, Truth Unveiled, and hear it in Joel's words, because I think they're beautiful. When you reach that place where instead of searching for a truth, feverishly reading or studying to latch on to some truth, when instead of that you can relax and rest in the truth without taking thought, without any speaking, without any thinking, you can be a state of awareness. And then you understand the meaning of man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word or every movement that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. You will then discover that every word, every feeling, every movement, every emotion, every thought that comes to you from that deep withinness is what you now live by. This is the spirit within, which guides, directs, sustains, and protects. It goes before you to make the crooked places straight. Our ultimate goal must be to live in, through, and as God. If we are not to do this, why did the Master teach, take no thought for your life? Life is meant to be lived by grace, without power of any kind. And again, he says, see what happens on the seventh day, on the Sabbath. In the meanwhile, his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. But he said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. He was telling them not to go out and get meat, but to rest in the Sabbath of I have. No words, no thoughts, no might, no power. You students who are going through this initiation, you students who are ready for the Sabbath, must prepare for it by learning to rest back in this realization. I let my soul take over instead of my mind. Then, every time you go within, something new and fresh will come forth. Of course, it's a new creation. Behold, I make all things new. In the consciousness of this Sabbath, in this Christ consciousness, you do not have to go out and get meat, because you have it. How do you have it? By your recognition that you and the Father are one. Says Joel, for 6 days you have labored to study and to train yourself, and those 6 days, remember, are for most of you many, many years. But there does come a rest to my people. There comes a Sabbath, and that is when you stop all your metaphysical struggling and relax. Let grace live your life. Those students in this initiation who have been listening and studying with the inner ear for many years are now entering that period of Sabbath when they can feel within themselves, I don't know any truth. I cannot live on quotations. The only truth I know is what is coming forth from that deep well within. I am now living in a period of unknowing, in which every day I go within to receive the manna for that day. I listen for thy voice. Thy grace is my sufficiency. You see how beautiful this is. How beautiful. He says the infinite way takes you through the 6 days of labor, thinking and knowing truth, searching for truth, pondering truth, meditating truth, until finally you go beyond the activity of the mind. Finally, you come to the Sabbath, and every word that flows from God into your awareness becomes the bread, the wine, the water, the health, the strength, the vitality, and all that is necessary for your experience. And so, my dear friends, as we walk through this initiation, alone, yet not alone, I say to you that these moments of stepping out of the human mind, the world mind, the mental images of this world, and standing still in that pool, in that deep, deep universe within, and beholding spirit, the movement of spirit across the waters. This is how you are made new. This is how you are transformed. This is how you are made a new creature. This is how you are lifted up to the place where Christ liveth your life. And this you can tell no man. To him that overcomes this human mind, this taking thought, this thinking, Christ says, I will give the hidden manna. And now we know what that manna is, don't we? We live by it. The invisible movement of spirit. To him that overcomes the mind, I will give the invisible movement of spirit. And I will give him a stone. And on the white stone, a new name is written. And that name is Christhood. And no one knoweth, saving he that receiveth it. No one around you will be able to tell that you have received your initiation, that you have received Christhood, that you have ascended out of the mind into Christ consciousness, into this deep universe, into my kingdom. But you will know that you have received it. You will know. Isn't this wonderful? Passing. We are passing from humanhood to Christhood, from mind to spirit, from images to the kingdom of heaven, here and now. We are passing from intellect to consciousness. We are passing from death to life. This humanhood that we thought was a life is death. Now we come into life, eternal life, everlasting life, Christ life. And this life will never leave you nor forsake you. And so we pass from humanhood to Christhood, right here, right now. We rest in the Sabbath. We rest on the seventh day. And we behold the perfect creation unfolding before our inner eye.